Thanks, Nathan. Good morning, everybody, and welcome again. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. Since mid-January, we have been spending every Wednesday morning here on the program talking to candidates who will be on the April 26th primary ballot. Those ballots will be very crowded. There are 13 Democratic candidates for mayor of Baltimore in an overall field of 29. In the Democratic primary race to fill the seat being vacated by retiring United States Senator Barbara Mikulski, 10 Democrats and 14 Republicans have thrown their hats in the ring. Last week, I spoke with one of those Democrats, Representative Donna Edwards, the 4th District Congresswoman from PG County. This morning, it's my pleasure to welcome Congressman Chris Van Hollen to Studio A. He has served Maryland's 8th Congressional District since 2003. He is the ranking Democrat on the House Budget Committee. Prior to serving in Congress, he was a member of the Maryland House of Delegates for 4 years. He served in the Maryland Senate for 8 years as well. He's 57 years old. He's married and the father of 3 children. He lives in Kensington. Good morning, Congressman. It's always good to see you.
Good morning, Tom. Great to be with you.
So what message do you think the current Congress and the current Senate should take from last night's results in this very wild election year? It's been an unusual election cycle. But what sort of message do you think they're sending not only to these particular candidates, but to the Congress and the Senate?
Well, you're right. It's more than unusual. I've never seen anything quite like it, especially with respect to the Republican presidential primary where Donald Trump is the front runner. And I'm not sure there's any one clear message. You know that Donald Trump began his campaign with very ugly, divisive rhetoric. It was an anti-immigrant agenda. He talked about banning all Muslims from coming to the United States. And sowing division, where, in fact, our country is one that is built on the idea that we need to come together to solve problems. It's been a long struggle to get closer to that ideal, and we got a long way to go. But what I worry about when I see the results for Donald Trump is that you've got at least some group of Americans, many who have been responding to the Tea Party message, who are receptive to that kind of message when, in fact, we need to be pulling together as a country and moving forward.
You know, the term Washington insider and establishment politician, those folks have been even more demonized, it seems to me, in this cycle than in previous cycles. What is your answer to the voter who says, you know, government is simply dysfunctional, we need to clear it out of all the career politicians? And what does that mean for a candidacy like yours, which is you know, based largely on a very substantial legislative career and record?
Well, I think if you look at the current state of the Congress, it's indisputable that the gridlock and polarization we see is largely due to the rise of the Tea Party. And when you have people who run on an agenda of no compromise, never look for common ground, it's all or nothing. The problem is when they get there, they deliver nothing. I'm proud, both in my service in the state legislature, as well as my time when we were in a majority, the Democrats were majority in Congress, to actually get important things done for the people of the state of Maryland, including people in Baltimore, passing the country's first safety trigger lock law to prevent accidental gun shootings in the legislature, prohibiting oil companies from drilling in the areas around the Chesapeake Bay. And as a member of Congress, getting rid of the outrageous profits banks were making off the student loan program. So we can get things done. And I do believe that the American people are hungering for that. And so I think their biggest concern is people who run on a platform of refusal to find common ground. And I'm pleased to have a reputation as being somebody who, wherever possible, seeks common ground for the common good.
You're running in a primary. A primary voter is faced with a decision of who is the best person to represent our party, my party, for that voter in a general election. Is it possible that your experience in government, the fact that you have done as much as you've done over these years, both in state and national government, could that be a disadvantage in a general election? We now have a Republican governor, the first to win a statewide election in quite a while. Do you have any concerns about your appeal in to a general electorate were you to get the nomination?
No, I don't, because I think the bottom line is that people want government to get things done. And that has been my focus. When I think of Senator Mikulski, for example, I think of somebody who understands that Maryland can only be strong if every part of it is strong, including Baltimore City and Baltimore County, the Baltimore region, and somebody who's impatient for results. And I have been very results focused, and I think that that's what people are looking for. I think their frustration stems from the fact that they see people mostly engaged in rhetorical debate. My focus has always been on trying to translate progressive priorities and progressive values into results and action. And as I said, been able to do that. And sometimes that means taking on and fighting and beating the special interests. Sometimes it means finding common ground. But I actually believe voters are looking for people who are willing to stand up for what they believe in and also find ways to bridge differences and find common ground. And so I'm very comfortable as a candidate that I believe has been able to do that.
On 881, it's Maryland Morning. My guest this morning is Congressman Chris Van Hollen. He's running in the Democratic primary for the United States Senate for a seat that will be vacated by Senator Barbara Mikulski when she retires early next year. I'm Tom Hall. When it comes to getting things done, what appeals to you about the potential and your possible capacity to get those things done in the Senate as opposed to the Congress? What do you think you can do as a senator that you're not able to do in Congress?
Well, first, I would say in the Senate, you're obviously taking a statewide approach to dealing with the entire state of Maryland. And I believe Senator Mikulski has done a good job of trying to deliver results on the ground throughout the state of Maryland. So, for example, in the Baltimore area, making sure that we support the Port of Baltimore, making sure we support BWI, making sure that we provide resources for Head Start programs and early education. And I think we need to expand on that. The other thing about the Senate is that there's more of an opportunity to reach bipartisan consensus. As broken and polarized as the entire Congress is, including the Senate, the major sort of bipartisan initiatives that have emerged in the last couple years have come out of the United States Senate. The Comprehensive Immigration Reform Bill being an example, that bill got out of the Senate, and Speaker Boehner just refused to even schedule a vote on that in the House of Representatives. It's not that it was defeated. It's that the Speaker refused to hold a vote and refused to allow democracy to work its will. There are many initiatives that I've been working on, including trying to build an economy that works for everybody, climate change, criminal justice reform. I think there's a real opportunity in the Senate to try to build bridges and have some common ground on those areas.
A few folks have identified just a couple of places where you and Representative Edwards perhaps disagree, maybe Social Security, maybe your approach to trade. How would you characterize the differences between your legislative approach or political philosophy and Congresswoman Edwards, who, as we said, in a large field, 10 people, she's considered to be your main opponent?
Well, I don't think you're going to find enormous differences or significant differences in most cases on the voting record. My view is that it's the responsibility of legislators to, vote in a way that reflects the priorities and values of their constituents, but also to be a strong voice in trying to reach out, listen to your constituents, and persuade them. I also believe that it's important to be more than a voice and more than a vote. It's important, as we're discussing here, to get things done. And others who have looked at the candidates in the primary and made judgments about who to support are supporting me. So, for example, SEIU, which is a union devoted to advancing the interests of working families, is endorsed me unanimously in this race. The Sierra Club, which, of course, is interested in protecting the Bay and addressing climate change issues, has endorsed me in this race. United Auto Workers have endorsed me in this race, as have the firefighters across the state of Maryland. So why are these organizations weighing in a Democratic primary? It's because, like most people, they want a candidate who's actually going to get things done in each of these areas. And I have a record of having done that, and I've got plans that I hope to work with the people of Maryland on to advance the major challenges we're facing. An economy that's not working for everybody. We need to change that. We need to address climate change and environmental justice issues, whether it's in Flint, Michigan, or lead paint here in Baltimore. And we need to reform our criminal justice system, and I've put forward proposals to do that. Gun violence, I've been a leader in that issue. So Baltimore city leaders and Baltimore county leaders on the Democratic side have been embracing my candidacy because they also want to see results on the ground in their communities.
The L word is back in the Democratic Party. Mr. Sanders, Secretary Clinton, for a while arguing about who was more progressive. Secretary Clinton, you know, known as a gradualist, an incrementalist. Mr. Sanders calling for nothing short of a revolution. Does that apply here in Maryland? Are you more progressive or less progressive than Ms. Edwards, and does it matter?
Well, I'm a progressive who focuses on getting things done, because if you're a progressive like I am, and I think at the end of the day, you want to see those values and priorities translated into action and results. It's not enough to talk about these issues. I was proud to be assistant to the speaker with Nancy Pelosi when we passed the Affordable Care Act. That was a hell of a fight. It required bringing people together to get it done, and 18 million Americans now have access to affordable health care. I led the fight against the outrageous profits big banks were getting off the student loan program. And again, one of the reasons I think you see every, you know, Democratic member of the Baltimore County Council endorsing me, and why you see so many city leaders from, you know, in a very diverse way supporting me, from Delegate Maggie McIntosh to the president of the city council, Jack Young. It's because they have to deliver results, too. That's what Senator Mikulski did, and that's what I would hope to do.
All right, well, we're going to impose upon you to stick around. We'll talk more after a break for the news. 8th District Congressman Chris Van Hollen, he is running for the Democratic nomination for the United States Senate. We'll have more with Representative Van Hollen after this break. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Mr. Sterner, back to you, sir.
Thanks, Tom. You're listening to the Maryland Morning Podcast, a service of your public radio, WYPR, in Baltimore. Find more podcasts at WYPR.org and tell us what you think by email mdmorning@wypr.org. Now, back to the podcast.
Welcome back, folks. On 88.1, I'm Tom Hall, and now we're going to continue our conversation with Congressman Chris Van Hollen, who represents the 8th Congressional District, which includes Bethesda and Rockville, as well as Westminster and Emmitsburg. He's one of 10 Democrats running in the April 26 primary for the United States Senate. His chief opponent is Representative Donna Edwards, with whom I spoke on this program last week. Congressman Van Hollen has been in Congress for about 13 years. He has also served in the Maryland House of Delegates and the Maryland Senate. He is the ranking Democrat on the House Budget Committee. Congressman, let's talk about a couple of particular issues. The first having to do with national security and privacy. Apple's CEO Tim Cook got a standing ovation from his stockholders when he walked into the meeting last week. When he showed up on Capitol Hill, not so much. Where do you stand on this issue of privacy and the obligation of companies like Apple, Facebook, Google to cooperate with the government when they're doing investigations?
Well, a couple things, and this is always a balance, and I have focused wherever there's a question, wherever in doubt, to protect people's privacy. And I think Congress is going to need to take some action here. Clearly, if we could find a way to get the information off of this phone that would provide information about the people who, you know, engage in this massacre, we need to do it. The question is whether you can find a way to do that without in some ways opening the door to breaching other people's privacy, as Apple says, opening a back door. And this is an issue I think many of us are now focused on. It's a question of law enforcement, of privacy. And there are lots of technical questions, I think, that many of us have as to how we might be able to go retrieve information that would be important to law enforcement without, at the same time, jeopardizing people's privacy.
So would you support, then, the FBI's efforts to oblige Apple to in this particular case, crack the code and let the investigators into that particular iPhone?
Well, this is the question. It's a technical question that I don't know the answer to, which is, can you get into that particular phone, retrieve that particular information without putting at risk the privacy of other Apple users and others. And so this is going to be the subject of a hearing. If you can go into that particular phone and retrieve that information without potentially compromising the privacy of others, then that would be the best result. What Apple is arguing is that you can't do it, that by going and retrieving that information, you will be putting other people's privacy at risk. So there are lots of technical questions here, and what I would do in a situation like this is listen very carefully to the arguments of both sides in crafting legislation to try to deal with this.
Let's talk about jobs. The New York Times reports just this morning the share of gross national product going to labor now, as opposed to the share going to capital, has fallen over the last 40 years by nearly 9%. This is this whole 1% of the population having so much of the wealth issue that, you know, it's been on people's minds even since the last presidential campaign. The number of manufacturing jobs has dropped 36% over that same period, a huge, huge drop. What can the federal government do to boost the manufacturing sector, if in fact that's the thing you think we should do, if that's a focus you think we should have? And in general, how does the federal government play a role, and the Senate in particular, in creating jobs?
So I believe this is the driving question for the country, which is to build an economy that works for everybody. Right now, we have an economy that works just great for folks at the top 1%. Everybody else has been running in place or falling behind. So I think there are a number of things that we can do at the national level. And I put forward a comprehensive economic plan. So number one, we need to make sure everybody has an opportunity to succeed. And that does mean investing more in early education and Head Start. It means making sure that we have community college and four-year colleges and HBCUs that are training our children and kids with the skills they need to succeed. It also means that we have to have an economy where if you're working full-time, you can never be below the federal poverty line. It's outrageous you can work full-time and be below the federal poverty line. So that means increasing the minimum wage. It means having provisions for paid sick leave. It means equal pay for equal work. But here's what I want to emphasize, because what we're seeing is a tax system that, as you indicated, rewards people who make money off of money, capital, and penalizes people who are earning a paycheck through hard work. So I've proposed a plan that would impose a fee on Wall Street transactions and use some of those savings to invest in affordable child care and elder care, to provide middle-class tax relief and tax relief for people working their way into the middle class so that people can have not just living wages, but living incomes. And I propose something called the CEO Employee Paycheck Fairness Act. It's outrageous that corporations can deduct, take a tax deduction for CEO bonuses and executive bonuses, $1 million plus, even when they're cutting pay for their employees. So we've said, no, you're not going to get these big tax deductions unless you're making sure that your employees are getting significant wage increases. So we need to change the entire tax code away from a system that works for the big corporations and the fat cats and works for everybody.
Republicans, perhaps in a general election, would point to that and say, here's just more of this, you know, visceral proclivity to overregulate, that our businesses are being strangled by all of these requirements, all of these obligations, all of these regulations. Is the way to fix the business field, to level the playing field, is the way to do that through legislation in Congress?
Well, what I'm talking about is getting out of the tax code all these special interest tax breaks that actually distort the system and, you know, perversely encourage some corporations to move jobs overseas. And these companies that are engaging in so-called inversions, where they simply change their mailing address in order to not pay their U.S. taxes, which means that everybody listening to this program has to pay more to support our schools and infrastructure. So the reality is, because of a lot of special interest lobbyists over a period of time, they've created a tax code that works for them. And what I'm proposing is actually evening the playing field and creating a system where people can get the benefit of their hard-earned paycheck. And we do not have a system that, a tax system that says, if you're making money off of money, you're going to get a lower tax rate than the school bus driver or the teacher. That is just wrong. And I put forward specific proposals to address that. And I think this is the pressing issue of our time, whether you're talking about someone who lives in Baltimore or someone who lives somewhere else in the country.
On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. My guest this morning, Congressman Chris Van Hollen. He's running in the Democratic primary for the United States Senate to fill the seat being vacated by Senator Barbara Mikulski. Let's talk about the Supreme Court. Today, the court will take up the first major abortion case that it's considered in the last decade. If there's a tie, this will then revert to the decision that the Texas Appeals Court had, and it would result in the closing of many abortion clinics in the state of Texas. Let's fantasize a little bit here and look ahead. It's 2017. You've won the primary. You've won the general election. You're in a room with Senator Grassley, Senator McConnell. How do you talk to them? What do you say to them to say, look, guys, we need to have hearings. We need to approve a nominee that the president has, sent down to the Senate. What's the argument to them to get this done?
To have a hearing and move forward on the president's nominee. First of all, let me say that this Texas law is an outrageous attack on a woman's fundamental right to choose and make her own reproductive choices. When I first ran for the Maryland legislature, I ran on the choice team because at that time there was a real risk that the Supreme Court was going to overturn Roe v. Wade. And at the time, Maryland had a very restrictive abortion law, really denying women in Maryland the right to choose. So the first thing we did was change Maryland law to protect the right to choose in Maryland. Unfortunately, elsewhere in the country, you're seeing this assault on that right to choose. And I'm actually going to be testifying later today in Annapolis on important state legislation on this issue. With respect to the Supreme Court justice, let me say this underscores the importance of having a Democratic majority in the United States Senate, because if we'd had a majority in the Senate, you wouldn't have been able to have a Republican leader, Mitch McConnell, get up and make the outrageous statement that he's not even going to allow hearings on a Supreme Court justice. And in order to get a Democratic majority in the Senate, we need to make sure Maryland goes Democratic.
Yeah, but that's what it could have should have, though. I mean, what the reality is now there is a Republican-controlled Senate. What's the argument to them? Because they're facing very stringent political obligations themselves. How do you say to them, look, this, we can't do it this way? How do you persuade them?
I'm not sure Mitch McConnell's persuadable, but here's the argument that you would want to make to appeal to his, some sense of institutional integrity and adherence to the Constitution. It's pretty clear right there in the Constitution, the president shall nominate. It also says the Senate shall provide its advice and consent. Not even having a hearing is not a path towards providing advice and consent. And I believe that refusing to even hear the president's nominee is a violation of Mitch McConnell's constitutional responsibilities. Now, as you know, I'm not sure that that argument is going to resonate with Mitch McConnell, but I believe we need to continue to build pressure to do so. But just as importantly, if we're not successful at that, it does underscore the importance of having a Democratic president and of Democratic majority in the Senate. And I would point out that two of the cases that Scalia ruled on, 5-4 cases, one of them was the Citizens United case, which was an awful decision that opened the floodgates to corporate spending in our elections. Another was the voting rights case, where they took a big bite out of the Voting Rights Act. So the stakes are huge, which is why Mitch McConnell is dug in, but it also underscores why this election in Maryland is so important.
folks in Baltimore a bit leery and a bit concerned about the fact that there is a Republican governor who has no ties to Baltimore. The two leading candidates for Senate, you and Representative Edwards, neither of you have particular ties to Baltimore. What's your relationship with the governor, and what can people in the city of Baltimore expect from you if you're the nominee?
Well, I think we all have an obligation to try to work together for the good of the state, and the Baltimore area is absolutely essential to the health of the state. Now, there is a Baltimore candidate in this race, and that's Van Hollen. My family on my father's side goes back generations in Baltimore. My dad was from Baltimore. My cousins all live in Baltimore. The only reason that I didn't grow up in Baltimore is my dad went into the Navy. And then he went to the Foreign Service. And so we lived in different parts of the world. I later worked for Governor Schaefer, and you worked for Governor Schaefer, former mayor of Baltimore. You are very focused on Baltimore. And I think that the reason you see so many Baltimore City leaders and community leaders supporting my candidacy is because they know I have Baltimore's interests at heart and look forward to working with them to continue to make this great city and this great area the very best it can be.
Well, Congressman, I appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you
so much. Look forward to talking to you further.
Yeah, it's good to be with you.
Representative Chris Van Hollen is one of 10 candidates who will be on the April 26th ballot for the Democratic nomination for the United States Senate. Congressman Van Hollen and his chief opponent in the race, Congresswoman Donna Edwards, have agreed to a series of four debates in the next few weeks. The first will take place on WAMU Radio on March 18th. The second will be broadcast on WJZ-TV on March 28th. We have extended an invitation to both candidates to appear here on Maryland Morning in mid-April. Every Wednesday morning on this broadcast, we will have conversations with candidates who will be on the April 26th primary election ballot. Next week, Baltimore Democratic mayoral candidate DeRay McKesson will join me here in Studio A. There are a number of Baltimore mayoral debates and forums coming up as well. Tomorrow night, I'll be moderating a mayoral debate at the National Federation of the Blind in Federal Hill. That event is sponsored by the League of Women Voters. And on Monday night at MICA, Citizen Artists Baltimore will host a mayoral forum on the arts. We've got a link to all of these events on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. If you are not registered to vote, you've got about a month until April 5th to register to be able to participate in this important election. We've got a link on our website with registration information. If you know folks who are not registered, please come to our website and send them the link. Coming up later in the broadcast, a conversation with John Fritzy, the Washington correspondent for the Baltimore Sun. He'll join me for a postmortem on last night's Super Tuesday primaries. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Now it's time for the Environment in Focus.